Page Burners.
Welcome to Page Burners. We're two unqualified friends tear apart other people's hard work.
Well, if you put it like that, it sounds malicious. We're trying to help. Like, yeah, it's fun when you find a bad piece of writing, and like, it's not to discourage writing at all. We want to support writers, and today we're in support.
He needs a lot of support in this one. This is Different Suits, Same Stripes. Subtitle, From Prison to Penthouse, How the Rise to the Top is the Same, by Jeremy Segal.
Yep. Where we left off, we were just talking about we hit a couple of good chapters, or relatively good chapters. He talked about stress relief, and he talked about some general issues with the prison system, which were pretty cohesive, I might even say. And then he goes back to being Jeremy.
Back to being Jeremy
in chapter 15.
You know what, actually, before we get into that...
Yes.
Let's, so, I mentioned this before, but this book has some pretty good reviews.
It does.
It has nothing but 5 stars. It has 14 5-star reviews on Amazon. And again, I just kind of, for the people who didn't read this, or listen to our last episode, or the last two. This is a book, a self-help book, where Jeremy Segal goes through kind of how he went through to prison for a few years, and things he learned in that, and how he's applying that to his everyday life.
10 months.
That's it? Just 10 months?
Yep, from what I understand, it was 10 months.
He makes it sound like it was like 12 years.
He had a pretty big sentence, but it got reduced. 10 months.
Okay. Does he mention that in the book?
No, but I know from another source that it's 10 months.
Okay. Anyway, so on Amazon, this one is simply called Prison to Penthouse. Subtitle, How to Dominate Your Way to the Top.
Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what it is. Man. Prison to Penthouse, How to Dominate Your Way, because that dominate your way is highlighted.
Wait, so he added another subtitle.
Yeah, so the print version that we are holding in our hands right now is Different Suits, Same Stripes, and then subtitle, From Prison to Penthouse, How the Rise to the Top is the Same. Now, this one's... I mean, that is a mouthful. I don't blame him for changing the title. Mm-hmm. I blame him for printing it before changing the title, but I don't blame him for changing the title.
Mm-hmm.
The first... on Amazon, it's just Prison to Penthouse, How to Dominate Your Way to the Top. It's the same general cover art and whatnot. It's $20 for this book.
Mm-hmm. And it's a self... It's I forget what it's called. It's not... It is self-publishing, but then there is also a type of publishing where you just pay someone to print it, and there's a box full of these things in your garage, and you directly sell them and supply them. And I'm almost certain that's the route he took.
Isn't that what, like, fan fiction authors often do?
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing. There's no shame in that process. That works for specific people that, especially if you have a stored an audience in which you know you can have these things and ship these things yourself.
That's the rub, isn't it?
It is the rub. There's different ways to self-publish. I'm not going to go into that right now. I am not an expert. We are underqualified.
Yeah, neither of us. I mean, I can speak for myself, I guess, but I've never published anything I've written. Anyway, so all these reviews are really glowing, suspiciously so, since it's 14 5-star reviews, and we're featuring this on the podcast.
Yeah, bring me one of those.
Outstanding book with great principles to excel in any career. I highly recommend this book. I am on the other side of the spectrum in law enforcement, and the principles in this book relate as much in my field as it does in the world of prison. It is a book that is a roller coaster ride as you get to know Jeremy and see him grow and excel before your eyes. I read it from front to back in 3 days, and I am a very slow reader, lol. I had some busy days, but did not want to put it down. Did I mention how great this book? Anyway, that's me.
Did he? Oh, gotcha.
No, that wasn't... That's me ad-libbing. I am now having my 17-year-old soon read it, and only wish I would have read it earlier in my career. Great book.
He He's educating our law enforcement now.
He's educating our law enforcement.
Oh, dear.
Here's another one. I have never been to prison, but have worked in a very difficult, convoluted, and complex business for about 19 years. Man, you gotta go to work every morning. It's a prison, I tell ya. Mm.
Oh, man.
8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
You gotta stab people.
Which enabled me to relate firsthand to everything the author had to say. I read his book because I am always looking for new ideas and concepts on leadership and how to leave diverse groups of people with different personalities. I just realized we didn't do the disclaimer, did we?
No, this book is not for kids. Neither is this podcast. Continue.
Okay, I felt I should say that before I point out everything which enabled me to relate firsthand to everything the author had to say. Does that include hashtag don't get raped?
Yes, and that also includes his creepy dating advice.
And how to get fondled and stuff like that.
And how to fondle. But anyway, yep, everything. Everything is agreeable.
Everything.
Story. Everything.
It's a unique life story with practical wisdom.
Yep. At the very end of his book, and I'm bringing this up because it has to do with reviewing. He says, what's next, Colin? Which, you know, this is the part of a self-help book where you've come to the end and you're like, well, I want to go ahead and act on this. First step of how to act on this. Please leave a review on Amazon only if you liked my book and are at least willing to say as much. Hashtag help me help you.
Oh, crud. We're not allowed to review on Amazon, are we? Because we don't like this book.
Oh no.
We're not willing to say as much. How can we help him help us?
Well, I did like that one part. So I can maybe, since that is approximately less than one-fifth of his book, I can go ahead and leave one-fifth of a five-star review.
Ooh, I see what you're doing there. Help me, hashtag help me help you. This is the last page of the book. Hasn't he already helped you by now?
No.
I don't think we want any more of his help at this point.
It's the true help only happens after you really invest in the grifter. to sign up for a free course and to solidify implementing for success. And he gives an email here to go ahead and sign up to, like, be life coached or whatever.
So is this like a group thing or is this a one-on-one thing? Like,
I have no idea. I'm not going to investigate further in this.
But I can't sign up and just have Jeremy show up at my house and be like, all right, here's how you get fondled.
This is how you stab with jokes. Which is stab with.
Have you. I mentioned I never had to stab anybody?
Oh, goodness.
All right, let's get into it.
Yeah, and then he talks about other ways to contact him, likes all of his posts on social media. And so all the ways to take something away from this book that he lists here is literally just invest in me. And that's... You can tell that that's the focus. It's just unfortunate. It is. It's unfortunate that at the end of a self-help book, you have the person saying, what's next? Buy my merchandise. Follow me on Facebook and invest in me further. Not invest in you. And it's this kind of prosperity gospel. If you help me, that you'll somehow be helped as well. And I'm going to be pretty disagreeable, if you understand, because on page 136, the next chapter is be disagreeable.
Okay.
Hello.
Make sure they know when your vision is different.
Yep.
I mean, I have 20/20. What's your...
Oh, dear.
I'm pretty sure our vision's a bit different.
Yep. I'm not going to go through everything here because this is probably one of the clearest chapters that is a rehash of assert or be hurt. But it just starts off with more humble bragging, and I'm not going to go through more of this, honestly. So I'm going to skip through this. A lot of these late chapters are just rehashing of prior concepts, and it's not done by really adding much more. So in sake of time, I'm just going to skip this because it's a rehash of assert or hurt. So chapter 16.
Embrace confrontations. Sometimes you just got to put your back to the wall and get busy swinging.
Yep.
Exactly what Gandhi said.
Just what Babe Ruth said.
Okay, someone else.
Babe Ruth.
This one wasn't Gandhi. Okay.
Yeah, this one, you know, because we all know Babe Ruth, he was beat up for being a chubby kid. And he would often have his back to a wall. And he would get busy swinging. And that's how he did.
That is how the Babe Ruth do.
So, the first page suggests that this is all about looking at the world in a positive light, even when the world hands you a raw deal. But the prison story that he tells in this chapter tells us that embracing confrontations means being disagreeable, which makes this chapter just a rehash of the previous chapter, which is already a rehash.
So we're just repeating the same points for another, you know, 10 pages.
Exactly. Yep. The story in it, though, is actually pretty interesting. Essentially, he has a cellmate who's got himself into some debt, and he allows his cellmate to go ahead and deal with some contraband as long as his cellmate agrees to take full responsibility should they get inspected and caught. And he doesn't touch any of the stuff. He just knows that his dude is making tattoo ink and prison wine. And the dude gets caught and he's like, "Hey, dude, like, you know, I think if we both take the fall, like, it'll be easier." And he goes ahead and straight up says, "No, we're going to have a problem if that happens." And that's completely fair. So he steps, you know, stands up for himself, and the guy takes the full brunt of that, eventually pays off his debt, and he gets beat up. Not Jeremy, his son.
The other guy.
No. not by Jeremy, by the way. Jeremy's hands are clean in the beating up thing.
Yeah, he never had to stab anybody.
He never had to stab anyone. And that is not a criticism of not stabbing someone, but it's just weird that he says it that way. Chapter 17. Let me go ahead and let's just skip.
Program. Staying busy and having direction are two completely different agendas.
Yep. So this is another weird dichotomy that he does. After the first two pages, he drops the topic of of this dichotomy and talks about routines that you can do in your day, such as drinking two bottles of water first thing in the morning.
Is that supposed to be staying busy or having direction?
I did not, in my notes here, I did not specify which one is good and which one is bad. I assume having direction is the good one.
Okay.
Staying busy, just, I don't know. There's a little, like, you can kind of see where it goes on this, but whenever he has a dichotomy, he always lumps on extra things into one side and the other. And it's just like, why have multiple weird dichotomies where all of them are identical, but you just call them different things?
Yeah, it feels like he can't really keep his thoughts straight on his dichotomies here.
Yeah, it's very stream of thought.
And that's a pattern, is all throughout this book he's got these dichotomies, and they're all confusing, because I never know which is which.
Yep. Are you a target or an object?
Oh, don't get me started on that again.
Okay, chapter 18, that's 158.
Man, we're rapid firing this.
I tell you, because after we get through, like, after we go through one of these chapters, and we, like, once we go through that main topic, we're going to come across the same thing, just written equally as poorly, and rehashing it out exactly the same way, but, like, with a couple of weird, like, oh, instead of object and target, this one is busy versus direction. Like, it's... I'm not going to spend more time on that.
Yeah.
I'm just not. Chapter 18. ask good questions.
Your group will gauge your intelligence based on the questions you ask.
Yeah, honestly, like, ask good questions. But this chapter basically is just another hype man. which already covers asking good questions. And I do think that there's value in this, but I'm skipping it because I've already admitted that there is value in this. And I've already gone through a chapter basically identical to this, and I'm not doing that again. Chapter 19 is a little bit more unique.
Yep. Unique. It's funny because it's USP. Your unique selling position is what takes you to the top. It is highlighted.
Underlined and capped.
And italicized. Oh, never mind. It's all italicized.
Yeah, it's all italicized there.
I'm unqualified.
So unqualified, Cameron. So in this one, he humble brags the first page again, but talks about how to sell yourself by writing simple complimentary self-descriptions. So if you'll go ahead and read that self-description that he gives himself.
Why is this all... This is all underlined.
Yeah, it's all underlined because the spot that says you is... It's underlined okay. So that you can fill in. So it's trying to match it, but it's...
It just looks bad because he did it in Microsoft Word and he used underline instead of... And he used a page divider or something for the other... Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Me. I possess unwavering strength and discipline best suited for carrying the weight of an entire group through complex journeys. Add to that my ability to quickly forge the deepest connections at the highest level is what makes me your ideal leader.
So, man, I just want to have that speak for itself on how, like, it's like he's trying to sell himself to me, and he's trying to convince me to follow him specifically.
He's trying to convince you that buying this book wasn't a bad investment.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, he's hyping himself up so much there.
It's, yeah.
Like, great leaders easily communicate their ideas in 50 words or less. Tell me exactly what it is that makes you special enough to lead your entire group. And all he says is, I'm special enough to lead my entire group.
Yep.
Doesn't really say why, it's just because I am innately gifted at it.
Yeah, and I'm strong, and I can carry the entire weight.
I am strong, man. I carry the entire group. I don't know why I went Russian with that. All right, well, anyway.
I think that's... I don't have issue with you being Russian, man. Like, if you happen to be red, you know.
You know, why are fire trucks red?
Because they're always rushing around. All right.
This is the real reason people subscribe to us.
Yes.
That's the three people subscribe to us.
Good God. So I have no issue with writing, like, especially if you have, like, issues with self-image. I think having an exercise of writing out something very complimentary to yourself can help build that self-image. But clearly in this case, like in this one, I feel like he gives a pretty poor example of what could help someone, because his is very strong and elite and just very, very, very confident, instead of trying to have, like, the simple wins that someone could use of being like, I'm comfortable with my body, or I enjoy my hobbies. I find value in what I spend my time in. Or, like, you know, instead of having this kind of open communication that could be very healthy, I feel like this is just a poor example of what would be good to write for yourself.
Instead of just, let's make yourself sound like you are a god among men, you need to be bowed down to. It's,
yeah.
It doesn't hit right.
So besides that, I feel like that practice is honestly a positive one, but he gave a poor example of it. He definitely did not invent that practice. That's, but I don't think he was claiming anyway. But in this chapter, he then tells a story about a dude getting shot after stabbing someone over 65 times. He commemorates this moment with the hashtag bones like that Swiss, because Swiss cheese is a term for stabbing someone over 65 times. I don't know where he got that number from, 65. And I don't know how you would manage to stab someone 65 times in high security before.
Okay, so why are we telling this story then? Because this sounds terrible.
Yep. Let me keep on my notes. Maybe I explain this. Maybe I don't, because maybe he doesn't. But yeah, Bones, which is the dude's name who did the stabbing, was apparently really respected by a ton of people due to his violence, which makes it so weird that he's being used as an example of what someone should try to emulate in creating an image around themselves. He also puts out an ad in this chapter that makes it look like he's an attorney calling himself managing partner, which he is not an attorney, nor is he. Like, so he uses the phrase partner.
Yeah, he straight up just has an ad for a legal firm here.
Yeah, he does there. His card on this says Jeremy Segal, managing partner, which isn't a lie, but when you generally use the term partner in a law firm, that means you're one of the attorneys that owns the firm, which he's not an attorney. He could, I don't know how you would own a firm. I don't know how you not be an attorney and yet own a law firm. That seems like he doesn't. That's misrepresenting here. I think managing partner, I just take issues with how he does his own job description here.
The dude's phrasing it as if he's much higher up than he is.
Yeah. So USP, unique selling position, is, hey, find your strength. I think if we're to have a good message in this, it would be find the strength that you can then go ahead and sell someone else. That's your unique selling position. And then he uses, he then lies about his qualifications in, or misrepresents what his qualifications are for a legal firm, are, and then talks about how it was good that this person did stabbing because people respected him for his violence. And that was
his... Is that where the story goes with this Bones guy?
That was his unique selling position.
Is that he stabbed someone 65 times?
Yeah, and people would not mess with him because he was so respected. And that's his unique selling position.
Okay, that clashes with... Don't stab somebody, or try not to stab somebody. So
imagine what image you're also sending, because there are troubled, you know, kids that go out and they shoot up schools and stuff like that. And if you go ahead and put in their minds that you get respect through violence, and they're in a position in which they're getting bullied and they are not feeling respected by their peers, you're putting in the idea that the way that they earn that respect is through sheer violence. And that is a dangerous message to send someone. And that's where I'm going to leave that thought.
Okay.
Podcast not for kids.
Yeah.
Neither is this book.
But that one person's making their 17-year-old soon read it.
I hope that 17-year-old soon is smarter than his father. Hope so. In reading through this, that they will navigate it and take away any good pieces that they come across with a critical mindset, and then
and about three grinds of the salt grinder.
Yep. Chapter 20: Back up, but never back down.
You truly can't lose a fight. Everyone knows you're willing to have, because the only thing you can do is win. Wait, what?
That sounds it feels like after a boxing match when like Rocky Balboa is like beaten to all crud and he's got like a minor concussion and he's bleeding through every hole in his head. It feels like what someone would say when they're delirious off of a victory. You truly can't lose a fight everyone knows you're willing to have, because the only thing you can do is win.
It doesn't make, like, it doesn't make sense. It really does sound like you're delirious when you say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't lose a fight everyone knows you're willing to have.
Yeah.
Because the only thing you can do is win.
So, it's basically phrasing, if you're willing to fight, then you've already won. Which, no. But being willing to fight, like, it's there's so much nuance in being willing to have a fight that he does not explore too well. Like, in this chapter, he tells a story, and it's likely an oversimplification of Pacific Islander war strategies, where essentially people would go ahead and they get onto war canoes and invade, and if they're invading your spot and you acted tough and were about willing to fight, then the war party would be like, oh no, we're not going to kill you, and they'd either leave or they'd come join you for some kind of feast. Which I'm not I cannot say how historically accurate that is. I tried to do a bit of research on that, and I came up with nothing. But I think it's one of those things that, like, I feel hyper-masculine people try to associate themselves with Pacific Islander war culture, like the Maori warrior thing, which literally has a portion of that value be the people that you destroy, you should eat them so that...
Is that right?
Yeah, like, they were cannibals, Maori. And by eating them, you would then gain their strength. So part of that culture is... So, and that's an oversimplification of a long history of wars. And this specific example he gives is not Maori, but I believe is Samoan. And though there are a lot of similarities, conflating even... very similar cultures such as Samoan and Tongan is a big insult to many people. So it's weird. He just kind of goes on a story about, I think he also gives another prison story in this one where, someone was wanting to pick a fight with him, and he's like, oh yeah, you want to pick a fight? And the dude backed out. And yeah. Sure, if you look really big and nasty and you say, yeah, I'm actually willing to fight, most people are going to back down from that. But he's almost, like, specifically talking about physical confrontation here. And that is not always the case in different fields. And even if, like, say you are the bigger guy, but I just think to myself, oh, he's willing to fight and now I got a knife or something like that. Like, there's still ways that being willing to fight can encourage a really bad outcome. And stating that being willing to fight equates winning is just bad.
Fighting seems to be, like, the big motif in this book.
It is.
I mean, what was the end of the first, the prologue was, come on, sharpen your shank, let's go get this fool together.
Yes.
Like, the entire thing, and or like, his bit his where...
Part one's, like, fight yourself, and part two's,
Or his disclaimer to the people that bag on his book, the people who force him to fight.
Like, and selling us back lemonade or something like
something
that.
Something like that. Yeah. Something about our tears making good lemonade, I don't know.
You know, I don't think he's wrong about that. Anyway.
I mean, he probably lives off it, but...
Yeah. It's weird. I'm not sure if you want to cut this out or not, but I had a dream the other day that Jeremy Segal died, and I was actually pretty sad because I was like, man, like, you know, like, I may not like the guy, but he's still pretty young, and any time that happens, like, it's a bit of a tragedy that, you know, there's this inherent empathy or sympathy that you have for people, and in a lot of ways, I kind of doubt that he would share that with people he would call enemies or people he would disagree with. So, and that makes me kind of sad.
Man.
Yeah.
I dreamt last night that I was going bald.
It wasn't last night, but last night I had dreams about car accidents, which, since I work in personal injury law, makes a lot of sense. I actually almost got to a car accident on the way here. I'm just full of tangents right now. Person pulled in front of me. I had to slam on the brake and I honked at this old Texan. Anyway.
It's funny because I can't really do that anymore because my car is adorable. And anytime I lay on the horn, it's like, beep. It's like, how dare you? Beep.
Oh, goodness.
It's so bad.
It's bad.
Anyway, so okay. Chapter 21 is Get Good at No. I am so good at no that you're likely to appreciate me and my no more than them and their yes. So no is both letters capitalized and it's bolded, but yes is not. I love it. He commits to it.
And it's... All right. This is a rehash of his hurt or hurt and hype man again. Because essentially he's saying, like, don't get knocked over, don't be pushed down. And then hype man is also, like, get excited for people, build them up. So the means that he tells you to reject people uses both of those strategies. And, yep, that's kind of it. Yep, and chapter 22.
Oh, wait, he does this again, where he has the title of the chapter he's currently in bolded in front and center.
As a subheader in the chapter. He also has the full, it's weird, he rephrases chapter 8 in here, like, directly in the next page, where he says, don't hurt, and then chapter 8, assert.
What the crap?
So, like, instead of choosing to be, like, consistent in referencing your own chapters, which I don't know why you would reference a chapter that says exactly the same thing that you're saying in this one. Like,
you know, we haven't confirmed this, but what if all of these weird formatting issues that we're complaining about were fixed in his Amazon copy?
I'm not willing to look through that copy. I'm not. I'm sorry, 5-star reviewers, if you did actually enjoy the formatting of the Amazon copy and that Amazon copy is correct and does look good, then, you know, I'm sorry, I'm reading an inferior copy. But I completely doubt that because when you choose to publish books and sell them out of your garage, then you're buying them in bulk in like the thousands. I don't know what's the lowest amount you can get. Maybe it's 500 or something, but you're buying them in bulk. And I doubt that he's selling you a completely different copy. At any rate, chapter 22 on 196. Fight alone.
But I thought we were going to get this fool together.
Alone.
Oh, he's
alone.
Not okay. If this is your first day at Fight Club, then you have to fight. I'm getting deja vu.
I did tell you about this quote.
Okay, so
but we have not come across it.
Okay.
So he nearly got that quote right, but he said it. He said day instead of time. So it's not if this is your first day at Fight Club, then you have to fight. It's if this is your first time at Fight Club.
So that's actually from Fight Club?
It is a crappy... It's a near quote from the movie Fight Club.
Why didn't he just commit and go to Fight Club? People love seeing quotes from things that they like.
Yeah. So he nearly quoted Tyler Durden here, but he failed by one word.
Because, and he didn't cite it either.
And he did not cite it. So
we've gone over this ad nauseum, but this would have been so much better if he had just used actual quotes. Because people have said good things in the history of the world. Yeah. They've said everything about anything.
Yeah. I think there's this, and there was one that was nearly Sun Tzu. And yeah. I think both of those were pretty good. But, like...
But they're just him. They're not quotes.
Yep.
But he puts them in quotes, and he makes it seem like a quote. Like, it's just basic ethos. If you want to get if you want to get an idea across, you appeal to people that are better than you, like, or the historical figures that had your same idea, or that I didn't phrase any of this correctly, but
I'm getting the point, and we're not
use authority. Use other people's authority to prove your authority, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that was exactly, but all right.
So he nearly got that quote right. The chapter is mostly a history of brawls that he got himself into over the course of his life. The funniest one is when some people at UNLV got offended that he's revving his engine. This is according to him, of course. He comments that he thinks he got 4 girlfriends by winning that fight. That's
very alpha male.
Yep. It's all hyper-masculine bragging punctuated by the Fight Club quote. A mention of that crappy study that talked about... He does talk about the Alpha Wolf study in this one. And the amazing quote, "You'll never be able to conquer anything unless they know you're willing to fight everything." So unless if you're willing to conquer the entirety of world and existence itself, then you won't have any success in conquering the smallest thing. Because as Alexander once said, he wept because he had no more worlds to conquer, which is not at all a true quotation, because that was misquoted in Die Hard, and it's actually he was weeping because he had not conquered even one world. And that's a bit of weird history quotation for you. And if you came across that quote and it sounds familiar and you've watched the entirety of The Community, then it is Jesus wept for he had no more worlds to conquer. Which is one of my favorite quotes from a show, because it's misquoting two things, and it's beautiful. And the implication that Jesus is this conquering entity is the most hilarious thing. I love it. I love that quote.
Just going back to Gandhi, it reminds me of Civilization.
Yeah!
Where I think the story was that the programmers, as you progress in Civilization, the AI will adapt depending on, you know, new technologies that they get. It'll go plus up or down or up in aggression and whatnot. And so Gandhi, at a certain point, starts out with 0 aggression or 1 aggression or something like that. And if he goes lower, he loops all the way around to 99 aggression. And Gandhi becomes the most violent sociopath in the civilization.
And it became a feature.
They kept it in every game after that, because it was just iconic.
Yeah, the people loved nuclear Gandhi.
Because he was always the first one to get the nuclear bomb.
It's so weird, too, because, like, most of his bonuses are very social and peace-like.
Yeah, it doesn't fit, but...
And yet, like, he's just the tyrant among tyrants in that game.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, we then enter part 3.
Because the rest of this chapter, he's just going on about his other fights, it looks like, at different ages.
Yeah, and he has a blurry picture of himself with a busted bloody lip when he was young. And it's such a bad photo that I'm like, why the heck did you even include it?
Well, he says cell phone cameras had just come out.
Yep. That doesn't mean you should have it and put it in your book.
He looks like something out of like a Ghost Hunter kind of video.
You know, that's true.
Like you'd see him in the back at the very far end of a dark hallway in black and white. And you'd be like, oh, he was in there for 2 frames. It's the ghost.
Ghost.
Ooh. All right, part 3.
Part 3. Earn the right to fight. Holds a lot of leadership buzzwords in these 2 pages. Could work if part 3 was actually about leadership. Part 3 is hardly about leadership. It just kind of rehashes a lot of the same things. The last little bit talks about having a group. He doesn't use the word friends, like a friend group or support group. But I'm getting ahead of myself. like, these are the things that he starts talking about, and he thinks all of this is about leadership and strength and stuff like that, and it's just not good. Anyway, chapter 3.
Earn the right to fight. He doesn't even have a quote for that. Well, I guess it's because it's a part, not a chapter. It's
part 3. Chapter 23, Amazing Fruit Cocktail.
Just realized we're more than halfway through the book.
Yes. And at this rate, we will get through it likely at the end of this episode.
Oh, we're going to be done after this?
Yeah, since a ton of this is rehash.
All right.
Let's do.
Okay, Amazing Fruit Cocktail. When positive is all you see, positive is all you'll have.
Yep. Does that sound like Hype Man to you?
Kind of, yeah.
Yep, be positive. Get other people feeling positive. So it's a little bit like Hype Man, but it's mostly just telling you to think positively. Less of a commentary on this book, but the ideas on a whole, like, I don't want to comment on the book on this part, because having a positive outlook as a whole can be very good, especially if you have difficulty thinking in a positive light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, having a mental practice of thinking things through and get trying to give it more optimism is something that can definitely help you. But I also have my own issues with everything has to be positive, and I've seen some people really try to push this idea that everything has to be positive, 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 and I think that's almost just sickening to me.
I like listening to edgy music from time to time.
It's not even all that, but like, I find it's a way to just kind of stave off criticism from them, because like, if like, say Jeremy listens to this and he's like, hey bro, why are you so negative? Then all of a sudden I'm trapped, because any of the valid criticisms I've had have now just been shedded in this light of I'm being negative. And I find that the people that preach this kind of gospel the most use it as a baton more often. And I'm thinking of one person in particular that has used it in my life, and I very much distance myself from them. So this portion of commentary probably isn't the best as criticism for this book, but more of a criticism for the idea that you should just think, like, when positive is all you see, positive is all you have.
Be nice if we could only see positivity.
La Via Rosa. The color pink. Life in pink. Chapter 24 on page 212.
Supercomputer Connect.
I'll read the quote on this. The bigger your webbing, the greater the influence you wield. That's an evil Spider-Man quote.
That's again going back to comic book villains, because it's Spider.
There's got to be some kind of Spider-Verse in which the Green Goblin is the good guy.
I've trapped you in my web. That's exactly what Green Goblin sounds like.
Yeah, but that's like the evil Spider-Man version of that, if Green Goblin's good in that. Anyway, I'm too nerding out on that.
It does sound like something that would be in like Spider-Man 3 when he started dancing, and he's like being all creepy to women and whatnot.
The bigger your webbing, the greater influence you wield. That's like
you want to get caught in my web?
Hold it. I feel like if Uncle Ben was a douche.
Take the more power, more responsibility. Just be like, the bigger your webbing, the greater the influence you wield.
Doesn't talk about the responsibility of wielding.
Here's a funny thing, though. If you take out webbing and replace it with a different word...
Oh, yeah.
It also sounds exactly how you would expect this to sound.
Yep. Man, what an amazing fruit cocktail.
It's funny because we talked about fruit cocktails in the last chapter.
Yep, which I cannot tell you why he uses that metaphor. But anyway, it's fruity. It's delightful, maybe. I've never had a fruit cocktail. Sue me.
Fruit cocktails. Yummy, yummy. Anyway,
this is yet another... hype man. This time it's got a computer spin on it. And the more about it's honestly more about manipulating people. And, you know, Cameron, since you're a computer guy.
Oh, boy.
Please read this first paragraph and just soak that in.
Oh, boy. Okay. When computers were first created, they were extremely large and got very little done. On its easiest explanation, a computer computes by reading code created by many sequence switches in on-off or 0-1 positions. The ability to severely shrink the size of the switches slash processors and place a substantially greater amount of connections in the same area is the reason we are able to have so much more computing power. Even more so, a supercomputer is basically a massive amount of processors capable of more computing power with the ability to obtain the greatest solutions and results compared to any other. Okay. Ability to shrink the size of the processors. I mean, yeah, that's technically true. The processors do get smaller and they become faster. They're able to do those ones and zeros much, much faster as they get more complicated. Shrink the size of the switches. Like, even in computing terms, or even in non-computing terms, that doesn't make sense. If I keep going on this, I'm going to get very pedantic about it. We need to keep...
All right. So, how about this? Just 1 to 10, does this compute?
He's right about the on-off... It's just a series of on-off switches.
The 1-0s, yeah.
Yeah, all the processor does is do math really, really fast. And supercomputers do math the fastest of anything.
So... 1 to 10?
4. Like, he really? Started out, like, he understood kind of what it was going at, but the terminology he uses really gets you lost on it.
Gotcha. All right. That's basically all the kind of important things in this chapter. I'm going to point this out probably this one time, but he constantly does these big lists of, like, previous chapters you've read. Like, and he asks the question, like, how did I connect? Simple. And then he says, show some respect to yourself. Maid service, big primpin', appreciated from far, add value, quiet confidence, assert or her, hype. He's just listing all the previous chapters. And at the end, he does mention, like, the next chapter, which, not the next chapter, actually. He skips the next chapter. And just mentions ball tickling, which we will get to.
Oh, God.
Chapter 25, Ideas versus Stories. Read that quote, Cam.
Where stories keep you stuck in the past, ideas will inspire a new future.
I feel like that's so wrong. Because stories inspire the new future. And, like...
I kind of get where he's going for. It's like we tell stories about the past, but we have an idea for the future.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, ideas are still stories. Ideas is like, stories are a subcategory of ideas. Like, be better. This is not a good quote. Where'd you get this quote, bruh? Anyway, this chapter has a terrible premise. It's just... another false dichotomy in this entire chapter.
Wait, hang on. Before we move forward, the page next to this has another weird hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
It just says hashtag connect, all lowercase, hashtag connect with the C uppercase, and then hashtag connect with it all uppercase. Why does he need 3 hashtags for connect?
Well, obviously, the more webbing you have, the greater influence. So the more hashtag connect he has, the better webbing and the more influence he wields.
The more just processors, like, I guess.
The more, if Uncle Ben put it best, just he'll...
corrupted Uncle Ben.
Corrupted douchebag Uncle Ben.
The Uncle Ben that you don't want at family Thanksgivings.
Oh, dear. Anyway. This chapter is another false dichotomy with all the good qualities in one category and all the bad ones are in another. This time it's just really clear, especially since this is like, it's just bad. It's just a bad dichotomy, and I'm not even gonna, because He even puts two different dichotomies in here, meaning the exact same thing back to back in the same chapter. First part is idea versus stories, and the second one is venting versus processing. And I'm just so done with your dichotomies, man. Just stop it.
Oh, but we're going to get more dichotomies.
We are.
It's too late to be done. Too early to be done.
Chapter 26. A series of small wins.
Start with the fights you'll know you'll win before the ones you think you'll lose.
Isn't that funny? Because he said if you're willing to fight, you'll automatically win.
Well, I mean, he's not saying don't do the ones you think you'll lose. He just says do the ones you'll know you'll win first.
No, but if you've decided to fight, you've automatically won already.
Okay.
So, in this one, Jeremy, why do you make this quote, bruh?
Bruh.
You're contradicting yourself.
Him, Jeremy, contradicting himself in his own book?
Yeah, this is basically just maid service and big primping again. Do small things every day and have those little victories. It's not bad. Yep. Chapter 27.
Put in work. Either put in that work or someone will put it in on you. Put it in on you.
I feel like that's a penis joke.
Hashtag don't get raped.
Hashtag don't get raped. Small wins equal more testosterone equals more risk equals more success.
Okay, I don't think those equal the way he thinks it does. Small wins equals more testosterone.
Cam, it's clearly math.
Don't you understand the associative property?
The associative property.
Small wins equals more success. Small wins equals more risk. Wait. You... Small wins equals more risk?
Yep.
Okay, moving on.
That's so weird, man. 27, let's see. This is less about hard work being its own reward and more about others looking at how hard you're working and rewarding you for the looks of how hard you're working. It's all very superficial. The irony is very present when he says, quote, being that my self-worth was not based off others, my ego was luckily never at risk of being manipulated by anyone except myself and my ambitions. Close quote.
Okay.
You wrote a book, Jeremy.
But it's not his ego writing the book. It's his wisdom, his superior intellect.
My goodness, Jeremy.
It just happens to stroke his ego along the way.
Man, if it tickles his balls. We're getting close. I think we're two chapters away from that. Chapter 28.
Pull him aside and let him sweat.
Yep.
Create their self-doubt, and you'll force them to punish themselves. This sounds sociopathic.
It is. The story he tells on this is essentially him having a confrontation with an Aryan gang member, and this person picking on him, and then he's like, hey, you actually want to fight? And then the dude's like, yeah, I'll fight. And he starts walking that way, and he's like, actually, no, I'm not going to fight. And then he backs down.
I choose to believe it happened in that exact tone.
Yeah, I just...
Yo, dude, well, you want to fight? Yeah, man.
Yeah. He does actually have a little section. He did not invent this one on page 237. It says, step 4, assert or hurt, which, once again, is just rehashing another chapter. He literally just calls step 4 assert or hurt. And he says, this is a boundary statement. You use I feel, blank, when you, blank, because, blank. In the future, I need you to, blank. If you don't, I will, blank. And that's creating a boundary. I think that's honestly a pretty good tool to use if you find that you're having some issues creating boundaries with folks. And that can help kind of organize your thoughts and feelings. Because sometimes when you get real angry and stuff like that, you say the wrong things, and if you're trying to set boundaries, sometimes it's the wrong kind of people that are trying to go ahead and punish you for that kind of stuff. So moving right along, Are you looking at that picture?
Yes.
Describe that picture.
So he's got his arm around two women with a third to the side, and he is holding a shank to the throat of one of the women, who is smiling happily at the camera.
Yep. He is not smiling, by the way.
He is not. She looks kind of uncomfortable.
I think all of them look kind of uncomfortable. But he is chill, cool as a cat, cool as a cucumber, just
knife to the throat. Knife. It's fine. It's fine. Halloween 2017, hashtag actual prison gear.
Yep. Chapter 29, next one.
Ball tickling. Capture... Okay, I'm going to say this salaciously.
Yes, please do.
Capture the movement of the lips as they smile upwards and ride it to the top.
Okay, that is very sexual. I'm sorry.
Do you want me to redo that?
No. It's not even the way you're saying it. It's just that this, like...
It's a chapter called Ball Tickling, and you're surprised that it's sexual?
No, it's not. I'm not surprised. I'm just like... So, the placement is they're low down. Their lips are smiling upwards at you. And then they will, quote, ride it to the top.
Oh, man. Okay.
It's just... I'm sorry. Moving right along. Ball tickling is essentially... a way of him saying, how do I even put this? It's like, if you want people to go ahead and do right by you, you just kind of make them feel good about themselves. You schmooze them a little bit.
Make them feel validated, which is a important thing in, you know, social psychology. Communication.
Yeah, which is very important. And he describes using those kind of compliments to get things from guards, favors, and not getting troubled and stuff like that, and general special treatment.
I feel like he could have called this chapter something like parking validation or something. Some pun on validation. Why did he have to go with ball tickling? Yeah.
Would you turn to page 244? Describe.
This is a photo. It is a lavish dinner table with lots of people on either side. The camera is looking down the table, and Jeremy is at the head of it. Mm-hmm. Birthday hashtag 36, tickling my way to the top. Mm-hmm. I recognize that as number 36.
Yep. So essentially, I think this is implying that all these men sitting at this table, which it looks about a dozen, that he's tickled them to the top. I'm just going to let that hang in the air as we move on to chapter 30.
He's just at the head of the table. Everyone's just looking at the camera, and he's just straight face. Like, yeah,
it's almost a Vladimir Putin kind of way that he's asserted himself at the end of that table. It's
all right. Let's not gaslight too much.
That's not gaslighting.
Isn't gaslighting when you try to paint an unflattering picture of some...
No, gaslighting is when you go ahead and try to make someone believe something that is not reality, even though they have witnessed something. So you're making them question their reality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah. But chapter 30. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's not... Because we're kind of now painting this guy to just look like a... almost like a predator. We should probably not be that harsh on
him.
Yeah, we don't want to get personal with it. But it is kind of funny. In the chapter about ball tickling, this is the way that he chooses him as the writer chooses to portray this is
himself at the head of a table of 12 dudes with the caption, tickling my way to the top.
Anyway.
Yep. Make them respect your time. And it is make them, not make them.
Make them.
Make them.
Never get into an argument that you know you will win. What?
So.
Isn't that the only time to get into an argument?
So, this is essentially assert or be hurt. as well as appreciated from afar all over again. It's just, he goes through his old tricks here. He does not really explain that. It's basically, well, I shouldn't say doesn't really. It's kind of like you don't want to hurt people. You want them to respect you. So how you do that is when you turn them down, you just go ahead and also build them up in one way, kind of schmooze them. So there's different things in here.
You will respect me.
Yep.
Huh. That's a headline as part of this chapter.
Yep. I'm going to skip through this because it's nothing we haven't already. We're very near to the end here. 31. There you go.
There it is. How do I... Criticing?
Yep. Which is the worst Pokemon.
It does sound like a Pokemon. Criticing. I'm assuming that's supposed to be critiquing, but he's trying to do a play on words with it.
Yeah. Yep.
Critique is your only tool for change. Oh, well, we got it then.
Yeah. Congrats. Also, he had a chapter about respect yourself or respect others, and he defines respect as a personal attack on someone. However, if you'll read the bullet at the end of this paragraph, you'll see...
Criticism is a positive attack on their soul.
We've done it.
It's a critical hit.
It's a critical hit. We're in the right now, Cameron. We've done it.
It's super effective.
So,
this is a positive experience, I would say, and we have hit him right to his soul.
Yep. Turn to the next page here. There's 3 points here I just want to go ahead and show. 1, don't rush into your critique.
Oh, we already lost that.
Foreplay here will do wonders. The fact that he calls it foreplay is terrible. 2, don't issue critique in front of others. We failed that one. Bladder shyness is a real problem.
Why?
Yep. And then 3, 2 backpats, 1 jab. Which he then changes later on to 2 backpats, 1 uppercut. Because he can't be internally consistent.
Okay. He's doing this thing again that he did in, I think, the first episode where he's like talking about, oh, never eat with another race. And then he like adds a dash and then some hard to understand anecdote on that. He's doing the same thing. It's like, what is bladder? I don't understand what bladder shyness has to do with. Don't issue a critique in front of others.
Yeah, it doesn't. From what I understand, what bladder shy means, at least my interpretation of this, because I've not come across that term personally, it sounds like he's saying, like, don't be a wimp, actually give criticism. But when put next to the, like, don't do it in front of others... Like, that's not the kind of support for that statement. It's almost just random. It's very stream of consciousness. You needed an editor, bro. Pay me and I'll make it better. You can sell another 1,000 copies. Chapter 32.
So on the backpack, some uppercuts. Okay. Disarm the weak.
Read the quote. I'll get into it.
Although we seek out fights with enemies, we tend to run from fights with friends.
I'm not afraid to fight you.
I don't have any arms to disarm.
So, it's a poor title, but it has this macho kind of sense of... Like, this entire chapter is like, strong good, weak bad. And he conflates disarming the weak and disarming weakness, which is two very different things. So he confuses that in the chapter, disarming the weak. He then kind of rephrases as ball tickling as he's defined it. And grit, as well as gritting, giving good criticism and... while disarming yourself of weakness is just kind of like a general self-improvement. But he puts it in this really weird frame, and there is a big difference between disarm the weak and disarming weakness from yourself or just removing weakness from yourself or self-improvement?
Well, I feel like he's already done remove your own weakness earlier on.
Yeah. If your tip for self-improvement in the self-help book is just improve yourself, screw you. Screw you.
The schnozberries taste like schnozberries.
Oh, dear. Chapter 33, Stab with Humor. Humor diffuses conflicts, builds trust, and increases the acceptance of new ideas. This chapter, not entirely bad. It tells the benefits of having humor in life. It tells it in pretty humorless way, in all honesty. I don't know why there's not a single joke in this chapter. Also, he calls it Stab with Humor, which is an issue, because, like, listen to this part. When we meet with people, we want them to enjoy our interaction, and there's no better way to do that than to stab with humor, as leaving with a sincere smile says it all.
Blood on your shank, but at least they died with a smile.
It's the weirdest thing. Stab with humor is not a good way to say have a good sense of humor, because you can't say be lighthearted and playful while in the same flipping page using stab with humor. It's just bad. Bad, bad, bad. Next chapter, completely opposite. Maximize discomfort.
Okay.
There's no comfort in the growth zone, which... cool, that's actually on a mug somewhere. Good job. Yep, basically he's like... He's had previous chapters about this. I forget which one he says it on, but essentially it's like challenging yourself and just challenging yourself to change, which if it, in the self-help book you say just improve yourself once again, it's heck with you.
And he does this, he has this deadlift photo in it for a second time.
Yeah, same deadlift photo. Chapter 35. I'm not going to go through all of this. One, because it's boring. Two, because there's a ton of libel in it. And three, or at least what I believe to be something that could possibly be libel, and I'm not going to involve myself in that. But there is a part about his dating advice, which is super creepy. This part is about rejection. Actually, did we skip that quote? Did we not read that quote yet?
Allow rejection to drive you and success to guide you.
I thought ambition drove me. Not my ego, mind you. But go in page 297. Go ahead and read this beautiful part.
Go in for that first kiss, guys. I usually go in for my first kiss within 10 minutes. Get it out of the way. After about 20 minutes of proximity and caressing her shoulder, I turned to her girlfriends, asked if they wanted to watch our first kiss, and then confidently grabbed...
Abby,
by her sexy face, where we all enjoyed our first embrace. Hashtag shout out.
At Abby.
Abby's name, lesson 3. Now I understand that this is likely a crime in some countries, but that's the entire effing point of this chapter. Follow your effing... Okay, again, he says the actual word in the chapter, whatever, yeah. And he doesn't hear. Follow your F asterisk asterisking heart. Never let rejection control your agenda. Victory always favors the bold.
Rejection should motivate us, but we should not allow rejection to control our agenda. Also, this entire part is just so rapey.
It's so rapey.
So rapey. Like, he does not ask her permission for the kiss. He just announces that he's going to do it and invites others to look.
It's so great. It's so creepy.
Grabs her face, or her sexy face, mind you, and just...
Now, I understand this is likely a crime in some countries. Yeah, I wonder why.
But that's the entire effing point of this chapter.
What is... Follow your heart. Never let rejection control your agenda. This is so rapey.
It's just bad. It's bad. So, don't do that. Be good. Treat women with respect. Do not kiss them within 10 minutes.
And then don't take their photos and their actual name and Twitter handle and then put it in your book.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad, bad, bad. I'm actually, yeah. Chapter 36, Knight and Chandrite. I'll read the quote here. A twig snaps easily, but a bundle may be impossible. You can't make a bundle. It's impossible. Or it may be impossible.
I know what he's trying to say here.
I know what he's trying to say. It may be impossible to break, which is not true, but at the same time, I get it.
It's a whole fold of paper many times kind of thing. But
and this entire thing, this chapter, he does not mention the word friends, but he's talking about a group of people that could support you and help you carry you to your goals, and you'll help carry them. That's friends, but he never uses the word friend in this chapter, which I'm just like, okay, you see people just for the value that they have towards whatever goal you have. And I don't like that. Chapter 37 is Fight in Front.
It's the pioneer who gets all the arrows. That sounds bad.
That is a bad thing, but he means it as a good thing. You want to be the pioneer.
You want to be the guy getting shot.
Yeah.
What?
So, at any rate...
Is that the last chapter?
Yeah, that is.
Oh my gosh, we are done with this book.
Done with this book.
We're free.
We're free. He puts a really poor summary in that last chapter and in a last part called conclusion. It's not worth going over because it's like he just falls at the end because there's no cohesion, there's no interior consistency besides just repeating the same buzzwords and using... It's just bad. But that is his book. If you do plan on reviewing, once again, read the book yourself.
Yeah, these are our opinions.
Yep. And we do not mean to go ahead and assert that our opinions are objectively true. We're underqualified.
We're going to give this disclaimer pretty much for everything we read. Don't review the book based on our opinions only. Make your own advice or make your own opinions on it. They might be similar to us.
Yeah.
But our goal here is that we want to have kind of a constructive spin on it. Kind of show the things that they did bad, some of the things they did good.
Yeah.
We think we did that.
Yep. There's a lot that he can do to fix things up. There's a lot of chapters that I was just like, oh, this is Maid Service again, or this is Hype Man again. If he consolidated those chapters, it would be a much cleaner book. If he also just took one spot and was like, I mentioned in the previous one that there's a spot where he talks about him getting in trouble and then getting his sentence and being like, oh, well, I guess I have to figure this out. And he like hits the books and like that, he could make a pretty good like memoir out of that section if he really wanted to. And I wish I could do a rewrite on this, but the stories that he chooses to tell, there's not a really good timeline.
He wanted to tell the stories, but didn't have good places to put those.
Yeah, at least in a self-help book. I feel like if he really wanted to do a good-looking memoir and talk about his time in prison and his successes getting out of it, maybe he could clean up and revise the rapey kiss scene and make that like the end success and happily ever after or whatever. But like... You have to do a lot of revision and a lot of this. Perhaps maybe the actual moment was not really rapey. I kind of doubt that, but maybe it's just poorly written and he actually does have a really pleasant moment there and he can have kind of a cute an ending to that story or this story. There's a lot that could have been done better and he just...
It all stems to he needed someone who could critique his book before he published it.
Yep, he needed beta readers. He needed page burners.
And he both acknowledges that and then says screw that in the same book. It's really confusing. His dichotomies are weird. His thoughts are inconsistent and aloof. Mm-hmm. It just the book has no flow to it. It's not
a good read. It's not sensical. It just kind of falls very flat to me. But it could have been something good if it just somebody told him this.
Nevertheless, I found this to be an enjoyable book. It was one of those things that you love to hate. And I think that those things have qualities, and that those are the exact kind of things that I want to read some more of. Some of these things that we read are going to fall into that category. Some of them I feel are going to be hate to love, which I think we're going to do some of that next week. But anyway, we'll leave you in suspense for that one. Cameron.
This was a long chapter, guys. Thanks for whatever. Long episode.
Long episode.
Thanks for bearing with us. We just wanted to finish this book and move on to some other ventures. If you like what you're listening to, please give us a review. Be as harsh as you like, because we could definitely be better at this.
Exactly.
Share the word with your friends. We definitely could use 4 instead of 3 subscribers.
Yep. Word of mouth really does help you guys. Thank you so much for listening. You take care.
Yeah. What are we reading next then?
I thought we were doing Sonic High School.
Oh man. Okay.
So you want to do Sonic High School?
I'll do Sonic High School next.
Is this also going to be part of the
fate? Of course, it's going to be.